We just sparked up a joint here. What's up, Dr. Dina?
How's it going? Thanks for having me here today.
Hey, thanks for coming on with us. I really appreciate you having the time.
Of course. Gotta make the time for this.
Before we get started on today's session of the Cannabis Maker podcast, we're going to take a quick second to give a shout out to our sponsors.
Hey, Cannabis Makers, we've reserved this 15-second brand spotlight for you and your cannabis brand, business, or service to reach an incredibly diverse and international audience of cannabis makers and enthusiasts. Get in touch with us today to find out more.
Today's brand spotlight is brought to you by Nordic Herb Zone. Fire up a fat joint with the finest organic hemp papers out there. More taste, more terps. Be yourself everywhere.
Where are you guys based out of?
So at the moment, we're coming to you from the south of Spain. Myself and Øystein are sitting here. The company is originally out of Norway, Nordic Herb Zone. It's Norway's first cannabis brand. But Norway is pretty cold still this time of year, so we're kicking it down here in Spain.
It's lovely. Lovely. I love that we can have these international chats on here. So much fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I'm in Los Angeles. Oh, awesome. Los Angeles is you know, similar to Barcelona a little bit, but I don't know about the south of Spain.
Yeah, Barcelona is definitely a nice spot, but we're going further south where it's a little bit more sun, a little warmer. But yeah, definitely on the point that you make with the international side, I'm just going to bring it in here and say David is in here from the UK and Corey's in here from Canada.
Hey, Dr. Dina. Hi. Yeah, I'm based in a county called Nottinghamshire in the UK. Nice to have you on board tonight.
Thank you. I love the UK. I love that we're building this network of cannabis, you know, enthusiasts and advocates all around the world together.
Good morning, Dr. Dina. My name is Corey, and I'm just slightly north of you up in beautiful British Columbia, Canada, part of the Vancouver Bud movement up here. I really am excited to talk to you today. I appreciate you making the time with us for sure.
Thank you, Corey. I've wanted to go to Canada for so long, but as you know, they won't let me in.
Yeah, we're sorry about that from the community, sincerely. But yeah, our border guards are... I have more trouble coming home than I do going down there. I'll just put it that way.
That's wild.
I don't know, maybe Dr. Dina. Should we start it off as well for our listeners that are listening in later on Spotify and iTunes and Google, but also for the folks here in the audience. You want to share with us and the Cannabis Makers one thing that not many people know about you?
Well, actually, it's funny. Most people, you know, there's a small group of people that know, but most people actually don't know that the show Weeds was based on my life. And so, yeah, that's a big one. They also don't know that I'm not a doctor, even though people call me Dr. Dina, but I am board certified by Snoop Dogg. So that makes me an official doctor. Just don't ask me about any medical conditions that cannabis can't help you with.
Okay, we got that one for sure. Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think one thing I got to credit you for, though, as well, like you're always straight up with putting that out there and saying to people, you know, it's not on that accredited doctor side. And I feel like that's something that maybe removes the kind of difficulty in talking and communicating to people about cannabis. Because doctors, a lot of the time, you know, they're like maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago when they were still afraid of losing their license. We still have that today. But I mean, for you, I guess it's really been a good way to also talk openly about the plan and come forward. So maybe share with us and the listeners, you know, a little bit about your story and why you're with us today doing what you're doing.
Well, you know, I've always liked cannabis. I've always enjoyed the smell of it. I like the effects of it, but I wasn't a constant cannabis user until I was a little bit older. My first time I ever smoked cannabis, ironically, I think I was about 15. I was at my friend's house, the same friend who's actually coming to my house for dinner tonight. And his father used to be the owner slash criminal attorney for Death Row Records, which was responsible for putting out Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and Tupac and, you know, a lot of really amazing artists. And so they used to hang out at the house and they were smoking. And I guess, I don't know if it was, because I've talked to my friend and he says his mom wouldn't really care if he smoked. Back then, I thought that like, oh, Dina's going to tell my mom that I smoke, so we need to make her smoke too. And Snoop forced me to smoke weed for the first time. So that was actually my first time experience with cannabis, was Snoop Dogg asking me to smoke weed. But that was before he was really famous, and now we laugh about it. But it wasn't until years later, I had a friend who was I hadn't spoken to in a while, and he reached out and he asked me for the craziest request anyone has ever asked. He asked me for a gun. And I said, what? And he said, I just got diagnosed with cancer. I don't have life insurance. I don't have health insurance. I am paying out of pocket for my chemo. I'm getting very sick from the chemo, and I'm throwing up all the pills. And at this point, you know, I met this amazing woman and I married her, and I have $50,000 to my name. I'd rather leave it to her so she could bury me and have a little bit of money to move on than literally spend every dollar trying to heal myself from this disease, which is going to kill me anyways. And I just want to end my life. And that was the hardest phone call I've ever, you know, had. My first instinct was just, I need to come over and comfort him. And I stopped at a friend's house and I bought some cannabis and I rolled up a joint thinking like, oh, you know, he just needs to smoke a joint. Like, it'll make him happier. That was in my mind what was going on. And I went to his house, and his wife was actually from Sweden. And in Sweden, the drug laws, I'm sure are very, very harsh. And so she was very concerned that she would be deported back to Sweden if the police showed up at their house, and that, you know, he would be put into jail and he wouldn't be able to get his access to his chemotherapy. So she freaked out. I ended up yelling at his wife and I said, if you have a problem, then leave. We're doing this. And I lit a joint and I stuck it in his mouth and he took a couple puffs. And within a few minutes, he stopped dry heaving and he got a little bit of color to his face. And we started talking. And about an hour later, like, he looked at me and goes, I can't believe how much better I'm feeling right now. And he took a couple more puffs and his stomach started to growl. And he goes, I can't believe it. I'm feeling hungry. I haven't felt this in weeks. And so we called his wife. She came back home and she made him some toast. He ate some toast, the first food he ate in weeks, and held it down and was able to take his pills that night and had a really good night. And the next morning he called me and he goes, I need more cannabis. I need this. This is going to save my life. Dina, you just gave me a whole new, like, promise at life. If I can tolerate the cannabis with smoking weed, I'm going to live. And so he goes, here's the problem. You know, my wife doesn't want me to do it. I don't know what to do. Can you talk to her? And so I started researching doctors' recommendations in California, which it had passed in 1996, but no one was really talking about it. And I was able to find one doctor in San Francisco who was writing cannabis recommendations. And so I drove my friend. I live in Los Angeles. So we drove about 6 hours to get to this doctor in Northern California. And there was a line around the block. I had to go. My friend was so weak, he couldn't stand in line. And so I actually left him on the curb and I went to an office supply store and I bought an office chair that had wheels on the bottom. And I put it together on the curb and I rolled him down the street like a makeshift wheelchair until we were able to see the doctor, which of course I returned the chair later that day. And but it was very handy. Thank you very much, Office Depot. And we were able to see the doctor. The doctor took one look at him and said, oh yeah, I mean, you are a perfect candidate for cannabis. And he writes out a letter and I go, wait a second, buddy, to the doctor. We've been standing in line for 3.5 hours and you're just going to take like 30 seconds to look at my friend. Can you like take his blood pressure or like act like you're doing something here, you know? And he kind of laughed at me and snickered. He's like, sure. And he goes, you know, whatever. And I made a comment about how I had to drive all the way up from LA. So my 3 hour wait was actually like, this is a 9 hour day already and I have to drive back home. So it was a long day. And I said, how come no one's doing this in Los Angeles? He said, I'm shocked that no one is, but I'd love to. And literally that was the day that I said to the guy, I'll open an office if you want to come down to LA a couple days a week. And the next week we were in business. So that's how I started in the industry. And from there, I was seeing like between 30 and 100 patients a day. We were only open for 3 hours because he had to leave his clinic in Northern California, fly down to LA. I'd have to pick him up at the airport, drive him to the office. We'd have a 3-hour clinic and I'd drive him back to the airport. And so we were seeing a lot of people during that time. And they would all ask me, where do I get my cannabis? And I didn't know what to say because there were no dispensaries really open that I at least would feel comfortable sending someone to that didn't feel like a trap house. And from there, I just said, you know what? I need to just do it myself because I know that I could open a dispensary and give back to the community in a way that other people won't. And I'm going to do it right. And so that was really my experience, was fighting for people to have a good experience when they went to a cannabis facility, to feel like it was an escape from their everyday world and to treat them like they weren't sick, but to give them hope and let them know that they were being supported. And if you couldn't afford your medicine, we would figure out a way to get you that medicine. And so that was really, you know, where I started. We've opened up several dispensaries over the years, and I've been involved in manufacturing and distribution and cultivation and at pretty much every aspect of the California market, which is now legal. But it's changed very, very much, and it's become a commodity and not a plant that is a medicine. People forget that. And I just always want to remind everybody that it is a medicine no matter what. All use is medical use. And even if, you know, if you are smoking because it just relaxes you at the end of the day, that's medical use. If you smoke because, you know, you had a big meal and your stomach's hurting, that's medical use. There's a million different reasons. You just don't realize it. Oh, I just want to have fun. Well, maybe you have anxiety and this makes you feel better. So I prefer cannabis to alcohol. I don't drink at all. It just doesn't interest me. I think I'm actually allergic to it because whenever I did try it, bad things would happen. So I've always, you know, liked to be in control, and I feel like cannabis is the plant for me. And back to the story of how I got into the industry, my friend who was diagnosed with cancer, who was so, so sick, and, you know, the doctors didn't think he'd survive, he's been in remission now for 18 years, and it's been amazing. So I know I picked the right type of business to get into.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that one. And yeah, when you say just at the end, that really hit home, because when you say and for how long he's been in remission and how long ago this has already been in place, you know, with how we're looking at cannabis as a medicine and getting that access. And we see it a lot of the time that in Europe and some countries and some cultures we're just starting there, you know, like where California was 20 years ago, or where you were saying, you know, people over here, they're still traveling from countries like Norway and Sweden to places like Amsterdam in the Netherlands to see that doctor, to get that medical care, and doing that same thing, like to hear that is really, it's just also motivating on a side, because we see that one industry can go so far in that space of time, like over those years. And I think it really puts forward a lot of direction for people in Europe, so they can kind of see where this is going. So I really, really appreciate you sharing that one.
So bad. There's a lot of states in the U.S. which are so far behind even where you are. So, you know, it's hopefully things will change in the next couple years. I really do believe in the next 5 to 10 years, there will be a massive change and shift in the industry. I believe that laws will loosen up. I think that some of the states that started in cannabis, like Colorado and California, are realizing that, you know, actually Colorado has already done this. They realized we were a little too harsh, a little bit too tightly regulated, and they started to loosen up a little bit. And when that happens, more people are able to get into the space and we become a stronger community. And it's going to spread to Europe. I mean, the scene in Barcelona alone even though it's underground, it's strong. And so I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I can attest to that. I went from living in Amsterdam for a couple of years and being a bud tender there and just seeing that city, even over the past 3 years, kind of slow down and everybody just start to move to Barcelona, go to Spain. That's the new kind of place for the real kind of European center of how cannabis is making its way, also recreationally. But I like that you mentioned that earlier on the medical standpoint, that we really shouldn't forget that pretty much, like you said, all cannabis use is medical, because that person going home smoking it at the end of the day to relax, it's still helping them out with that stress. So I think that's something really, really important to always remember.
Try not to use the word recreational. And so spread the word around Europe for us, please, to use the words adult use, because it is accepted much differently from recreational when you're discussing it with politicians. And that's what needs to happen now. We made the mistake of using the word recreational in Colorado. And because of that, that's what everybody uses. The state of California does not have recreational cannabis. They have adult use cannabis. And so we do want to really focus on the words that we use, how we use them, and words are powerful. And so we want to take back our plant to what it is actually called.
Hey, Doctor, it's David. That's great stuff. Thank you. So I live in the UK. It's a country that's had a lot of stigma around cannabis for quite a long time. And I found, had a quick look at what you've done in the media and stuff. It's quite interesting. How do you think that the kind of stuff that you're doing in over there could help drive change over in sort of places like the UK where there is such a stigma? Have you got any sort of advice or tips for anyone over here and how we can sort of, you know, help drive sort of a bit of a positive message and, you know, use maybe try and use some of the media channels that we've got access to?
You know, it's so funny, David. I'm so happy you brought this up, because I never get to talk about this one interview that I did with BBC a while back. And the topic was something about, like, there was a lady on there and her son smoked skunk weed. It was like skunk. Ooh, like it's not even cannabis. It's this crazy drug that's going to make your, you know, mind go crazy. And you're going to go to, you know, go to hell or something. It's nuts what people will really think about this plant. So I think you need to get the word out. People need to think about their appearance. Now, if you ask my husband what my preferred outfit of choice is around the house, he's going to say sweatpants or a bathrobe, right? Or like a tie-dye t-shirt. But maybe then you'll say, oh, she looks like a stoner. But when I go out and when I speak on camera, I always try to hold myself to a higher standard. I try to dress appropriately to where like a grandmother would look at me and go, oh, she looks like nice. She looks like a nice lady. I'll listen to what she has to say. And that's really important to show that we can be responsible users. We need to kind of erase the Cheech and Chong image for people making the rules and running businesses. Cheech and Chong is great. They're funny. But that doesn't represent everyone here. And so we have to really take that into consideration. When I was doing the BBC interview, David, the newscaster, it was such a shocking interview of just how anti-cannabis they are. And what it made me realize is you guys need to have a group that is raising money that can pay for a publicist. And that publicist will book one of whoever it is, you, David, or your representative who's very knowledgeable and can hold themselves appropriately on camera and speak with conviction. Those people should be getting out there and speaking on the news. It was very difficult for me to do it because the time difference with the UK. But if there was somebody there that's an expert in what's going on, they're going to bring them up on air all the time. And because people are talking about this more and more and more. And so you do have to have someone who's pro-cannabis and be proactive. Otherwise, they're going to bring in someone who is the opposite and an anti-cannabis spokesperson and try to, you know, basically set you back in time from what you're trying to do. So you want to be proactive.
Thank you for that. That's great. Yeah, there's a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of individual sort of people sort of doing their own little thing, and then there's a load of groups. So, but now I'll take that advice on board. But yeah, if there's anything sort of any you know, maybe any contacts you've got in certainly BBC. What I worry about is that, like you said, that I think there already is a group of people that are anti-cannabis, and unfortunately we've got a problem over here where a lot of the media outlets are, you know, can be manipulated by the government, and when we've got such a divide of people that are anti-cannabis, it's kind of difficult to really sort of, you know, get the right message into that, into those reporters, because the hands are tied a lot of the times. I think, and what I think is going to happen in the UK is we're going to see the development of, you know, more alternative news sites, and I think the whole industry needs this, you know, because, you know, we've all had our Instagram accounts sort of shut down at some point, and, you know, there's going to be a lot more activity in this industry, so I'd like to see the development of kind of more cannabis focused sort of media platforms and outlets, so that, you know, we can really get behind this movement.
Well, I think what you're doing right now on Clubhouse, it's a mainstream app. Anyone can join this room right now. It's open to anyone with this platform, and you're able to speak to an international crowd about how to help. You want to get stories out. That's what I think made the most traction happen in the US, was actually Sanjay Gupta's CNN special, where he interviewed the parents and the little girl, Charlotte Fiji, about her seizures. And it was such a shocking thing to witness, to see a child seizing with Dravet syndrome, and how helpless the parents could be. And I think it broke a lot of people's hearts, knowing that this poor little beautiful girl was dealing with this horrible, horrible ailment. And then they saw her use cannabis and they saw her seizures stop. But I think that changed a lot of people. And so I think getting stories like that out as much as possible, instead of the 17-year-old who smoked skunk, who stole his mother's car and crashed it into a wall, you know, even though he drank a bottle of whiskey and they're not talking about the whiskey, you know, we need to get the positive stories out.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Dr. Dina, this is Corey here. Thanks again for taking the time today. I do appreciate it. I wanted to kind of comment and, you know, say kind of like as far as like inspiration is concerned, it's very nice to see, like you mentioned, you know, how you kind of have this approach where you have this certain look that, you know, kind of is encompassing to everybody. But at the same time, you know, if you Google your name, you're up with, you know, some of the biggest rap superstars, frankly, you know, around. And so it's this really, like, it's really inspiring, because that's what I try and do as well with myself, is try to bridge that gap. And it's really wonderful to see that. And I think you've done an incredible job of, you know, bridging those cultures together, because like you said, there is a certain stigmatization. And, you know, speaking a lot with David, you know, for Zana, one of the longest serving medical patients in the entire United Kingdom, and really understanding, you know, what's happening over there. It's really interesting. So I'm really glad that you brought those approaches up there. I wanted you to also, I know you mentioned weeds, but I also wanted you to give you a chance about, you know, something that you actually got credit for, which is disjointed.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Corey.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, you know, I just a quick thing, like I found medical cannabis when I moved to California in 2006. So it's a huge part of my life. And that's really the spirit, the dispensary spirit, and the people from Central California that really instilled this medical aspect to me. So when I watched Disjointed, it hit home pretty, I got goosebumps talking about it. Like, I even enjoyed the commercials and I couldn't believe that you guys
were
good for those fake commercials are hilarious. And they do such a good job of, again, like, you
being super cheesy.
Yeah, super cheesy, but making the point of bringing those cultures together and saying, hey, like, it's not that bad. And so, yeah, I really wanted you to kind of comment about, again, like how that opportunity came through. And I know that there's a story behind the character of Kathy Bates, who did just a phenomenal job. I missed that show, damn it. I'd love for you to speak about that a little bit, because the story about that is really wonderful, I think.
Thank you. I was actually talking to the executive producer this morning, and again, we were like crying about the show and we had so many more characters to bring back and introduce and all these storylines, and it's very difficult when you make an expensive show. People don't want to pay for it necessarily, but it did very well. I actually got contacted by it was weird. It was actually very strange. A bunch of different companies that I work with all called me on the same day, like hysterical, going, Netflix is trying to get a hold of you, or Warner Brothers is trying to get a hold of you. I'm like, what? And so I reached out to the person who was calling, and it was Chuck Lorre's assistant. And Chuck Lorre is the gentleman, executive producer, who he and creator of Two and a Half Men, of Mike and Molly. He wrote the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles theme song. And I can go on forever. He wrote for Roseanne. He's been around for ages, and he's sort of a TV, he's part of the gods of television is what they would call him. And he wanted to do a show about a dispensary, and he had a writing partner who openly used cannabis, very quickly announced that when I met him. And they were two white men who were bringing me in saying, we want to have a really inclusive show. We want it to be real. And they were open to suggestions of things. And they brought me in as their consultant. I remember actually the day before, and this is a good lesson to everybody. They had sent me a script the night before the meeting, and they're like, here, just read the script and tell us what you think. And I was really nervous because I'm walking into a room with like this legend, Chuck Lorre, and am I really going to pick apart his script in front of him? You know, this is kind of a little crazy. So I read the script. I didn't love the script, and I decided to start writing notes. Okay. And so my husband's like, you got to write notes. And when you go into this meeting, you're prepared and don't just smile and say, okay. So here I am. I'm writing out notes, basically like rewrite half the script. I mean, there were comments like, there was a flashback scene to the 60s and Kathy Bates' character lights up a joint of Jack Harrer. And, you know, here's my comment. Jack Harrer was not a strain until the late 90s, you know, so that she couldn't have smoked that in the 60s. But just little things here and there. And so when I went into the meeting and he asked me if I read the script, I responded with yes. And I have a lot of notes. And he went, oh, really? And we started going through the notes. I didn't get past the third note. And he said, you're hired. Whatever you want, you're hired. And so that really is a lesson to be prepared to go above and beyond. And even if you're scared to do something, or scared of to step on someone's toes, you know, your expertise can help. And so I started working on the show. We started hiring all the writers, and they would literally come to work with me. I'd be like, hey, you're on the schedule on Tuesday from 12 to 6. I'm thinking I'm getting free employees now for a while. The cast would come to work for me before we started shooting. So if you were shopping in my store, you probably didn't realize that most of the cast members were helping you so that they can learn how to actually act and what we do in a dispensary. The grower kid, his name's Dougie in real life. Dougie Baldwin was literally working in my grow room for a month before he started. So he knew how to touch the plants and the motions in which a grower, you know, how they look at the plants and how they fall in love with their plants, which Dr. I Dina, think if related. I can
interrupt just a quick moment. Please. I apologize, but I'm a cultivator, and the episode like bringing on like robot technology, I'm dying.
BioWave. The BioWave is a real thing.
Oh my god! Yeah, he did a wonderful job. I mean, that's like I said, every character that was in there, and I mean, especially the veteran going through PTSD. Really, really solid work.
Thank you. I actually got nervous because when they were showing me the animation scenes that they were going to edit in, because the animation was actually done before we even started filming, because it took them so long to do that. So we had to edit it in. And I would fight with them. I'm like, I don't want it to look too psychedelic. You guys are making it look like acid. And they're like, we want it to be funny and stupid. And, you know, they literally were making fun of sitcoms and making fun of the cannabis industry, but in a loving way. And it's interesting that a lot of the people that worked in the cannabis industry, when they first watched the show, they were very insulted by it. They're like, I am not like this. This is not how it works. But when they go back and they watch it a second time, they all reach out to me and go, that's exactly how it is in the shop. And you nailed this character. That's exactly the person that works for me. And so, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I thought it was a beautiful tale. I thought Kathy was such a champion. While the time that she was filming, she would go and do late night talk shows and big shows, and she would start talking about me and how she, you know, gets her vape pens from me and how she smokes vape pens in the restaurant and blows the smoke down her, you know, the sleeve of her jacket to hide it. And so she really embraced her character. She embraced the plant. So that was really fun. Seeing these people really like dive into our culture and be into it and accept us and not just look down upon us. So that was my fun part with Disjointed. You know, there were in the grow room, they used fake plants, right? And there's a company that makes them. And I would complain on a daily basis, like these don't look right. And so they would bring painters to come in and paint the plants and like change the color of these like plastic leaves. And finally, I just got aggravated. And I would, anytime there was a close-up scene, I would smuggle in real plants and real weed and play and trade it out before anyone would notice. So if you watch very closely into the close-up scenes, you will notice that like, wait a second, that's a real weed plant. that's a real piece of weed right there. That's a real nug. And so, yeah, I fought really hard for that. The actors would be practicing all week in rehearsal with fake weed on the table. And then right as they were shooting, they would open up the jar and it was real. And you can see the looks on their faces of excitement of the smell coming out of the jar and just going, you know, so they were really excited. And they loved the show. And everyone would fight for the plants at the end of the set because I couldn't take them back to my grow room because now they're, you know, contaminated. And so they would become people's kitchen table centerpiece for a while. And then I got yelled at. My husband's reminding me how I got in trouble because the people at Warner Brothers are like, you can't be giving out cannabis to people. I'm like, it's a plant. There's no weed on it. Come on.
Oh, so, I absolutely love
it. It's pretty funny.
That's great. Oh, I appreciate the contributions for sure.
But you know what actually was the best part, Corey, was when the show was finished and they needed to promote it, Netflix came to me and they're like, hey, do you have any ideas of how we should promote it? And I'm like, yeah, you should turn my dispensary, because we filmed it on the back lot, on the lot of Warner Brothers, in a sound stage. It's actually the same exact stage where Two and a Half Men was filmed. There's the same stage was, what was the Audrey Hepburn movie that was filmed there? And My Fair Lady was filmed there. So it was really, really, you know, a lot of history in that place. But I told them to revamp my dispensary and make it look like this show, the store on the show, and that I would put together a bunch of different cannabis cultivar strains and match them up with on jars that they would provide for me, and we can sell Netflix cannabis. And they were like, oh, you know, this is, we don't know about this. And I go, no, all you guys are doing is giving me the jars. I'm selling it. I'm not giving you any money. And they're like, oh, okay. So I actually held the first mainstream collaboration in the US of cannabis with like something like Netflix, which is insane. And we did strains for each of their shows, like Arrested Development had Banana Stand OG as an example. So, and so on. It was really cool.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I absolutely love that. It's such a cool opportunity, to be honest with you. It's, yeah, and you know, like I said, that bridging of the gaps between that, where you have the ability to kind of weave in and out of the different cultures to get your message across, is wonderful. And I kind of wanted to ask you that question. You know, the industry is changing. It's not like, you know, what some of the people in California would refer to as the good old days. How are you able to, you know, navigate where we are now? And, you know, kind of leverage that with, you know, helping out other states and, you know, potentially even across the pond where, you know, for me, like, I just don't want to see them make some of the same mistakes that I've seen on both sides of it. So is there any kind of efforts or, do you know, do you want to share
it? Well, I think we do have to get it together, Corey, because people are, you know, there's circumstances that happen that, here's a perfect example. And I'm sure you guys heard about this. There was a gentleman who I believe was in Colorado, and he smoked some cannabis and smoked some hash, and he got on a plane and he had to go to Dubai on business. And on the plane, he started getting really sick and he had to be taken to the hospital. He had, I think his appendix burst or something like that. And they had to drug test him in the hospital and he tested positive for cannabis and they arrested him. And now he's an American citizen. He's stuck in Dubai. This is something that's, we have to work out. We have to figure out what to do. He didn't even have anything on his, you know, on his person. There was no possession of cannabis. It was just in his blood system. So we can't let this happen. I do believe that New York is going to be a huge market. I believe that the regulations, and I'm not done 100% reading them through, but from what I've read, are very fair. And obviously we're going to see a monopoly, and that this is what's going to happen in Europe as well. When licenses start coming out, you're going to see like the son of the mayors or the son of the whatever are getting the licenses and not the people who have actually been fighting for the plant for the last, you know, few decades. And so you really have to start fighting now for regulation that is going to be inclusive and equitable for everyone. And in the big conversation in the US is social equity, right? They want to write in laws that make it easier for people who are Black and brown to get licenses to, you know, basically give back, and it's a form of like retribution or for the crimes that have been committed against their people over the years. And yes, that's a wonderful thing. However, if you're only giving out a couple licenses, it's not very equitable. And so true social equity is to allow everybody to apply, everybody to get a chance. And that's what I'm fighting for. And hopefully we'll see the laws in California change. Hopefully New York will get it online. And I think once you have California and New York going, there's so much travel to Europe from New York. I think they're going to kind of have to start having the conversation, because it's going to start getting really prevalent. You're going to see a lot of cannabis being taken to Europe through New York.
I think that's definitely something. Sorry, my bad there. We've got still got the joint here going. But I was going to ask on that note, because you've really put it so well. And thank you so much again for taking the time to do this. But you've taken it so well on really kind of encapsulating what it is in the cannabis industry, you know, what you got to kind of look out for. But really for the people that are, I guess at this point in time, especially over in Europe, you know, we're still in some early stages. There are licenses. There already is a monopoly in that sense, like you were saying. But what can the kind of aspiring cannabis makers really, you know, look out for and focus on if they're? I'm always, for example, a big person telling people to, you know, maybe don't look at directly touching the plant. Not everybody has to go into growing directly. There's still so many ancillary services that need, you know, our focus and attention, like getting the right access to medical care, getting the right information, education to doctors. What kind of tips can you really give us from your own experience to push forward on that one?
I think what you said are all really excellent points, and that's very true. I think that what I'm seeing is people creating lifestyle brands, and it starts with a lifestyle brand that happens to incorporate cannabis alongside it. And so you could position yourself now to be making some money, maybe selling t-shirts or hats and building out a brand so that when it does go to adult use, you can apply those brands to people's licenses and be making money without actually having to get a license by white labeling your product.
Yeah. Okay. That's definitely something I was just thinking now as well, because that's such a fair point. I was just going to bring up Anna here because I think she had a question for you as well. Let's see what we got there. Anna is working or doing a lot of stuff in Norway at the moment from what I've heard. Hey, Anna, what's up?
Hey, I was just like in the word lifestyle, like companies with cannabis. It is, I really don't remember the question I had, but it is really interesting. And yeah, I would love to listen more to the experiences you have done on the like human part of the interactions those lifestyles brands have had on the cannabis community.
Well, we have, if you see below in the audience, we have Mark Wasserman, one half of the Pop Brothers at Law, and his nephew started West Coast Cure, which is a lifestyle brand, and they are also in the cannabis industry. So you can just go to their website, and you could buy duffel bags and jackets and hats and really cool looking clothing and merchandise, or you can go to a dispensary and find their products available there. And so that's, you know, an example of a popular brand that is, you know, available in states that don't have cannabis. You could still buy their backpacks and duffel bags and be part of the culture.
Yeah, that is one part of it. But like a lot of people in cannabis, through my experience, have like their lifestyle is not like buying things. It is more of the experience of being. And do you have anything on that too, on that field?
Well, sure. I mean, if it's about the experience, then why don't you throw experiences for people? And that is by throwing parties and, you know, creating an interesting vibe and networking and building a community. That's a great way to do things.
I got to chime in on that one, because that is something that we're really seeing push up more now in Europe. And I think now as things start to ease up, we're seeing a lot more interest in these kind of events, you know, and I'm really seeing as cannabis social events where people really connect and you see the people from all over. Like, that's the one magic thing that I always experienced as a bud tender in an Amsterdam coffee shop, was all the people from all over the world coming together. And like on a Sunday, you'd have at the same table, you'd have your old grandma doing her crossword. You'd have your guy that just came off from work doing a night shift. You'd have another guy that's just sitting there enjoying the paper. You know, you've got such a mix of people in these same spaces, and just bringing them all together, I think, is the real kind of key. Like you were saying as well, Dr. Dina, with that lifestyle, bringing all that other experience around it and just having more commonalities for people to share. And just on that, I really wanted to ask you, Dr. Dina, this is a one question that I wanted to really ask you and kind of take a note from for us and for our listeners as well. What's really the number one thing that motivates you and drives you to keep going in this industry? Because so many people always find themselves lost at certain points. A lot of people are struggling, you know, that this industry is definitely not the easiest one to be a part of. So yeah, what's that thing that really motivates you and drives you?
Really lost more times than you could imagine. I've always feel lost in this space. And that's actually what keeps me going, is I know that this is a healing plant. I know that we are on the right side of history. I know that. And I've never done this to make money. That was never my idea of, oh, we're going to make millions of dollars in this industry. No, it was about, I'm going to help all these people. And when I used to work in a retail clothing store, I would make people feel good by getting them dressed up and making them look good. And they would feel good from the outside. Now I get to make people feel good from the inside, and that actually means way more to me. When today I go on Instagram and I see a picture of a little boy who, today he is 7 years old. His name is Waldo. Waldo became my patient when he was 6 months old. He had bilateral retinoblastoma, which means cancer in both his eyes. And his parents were told to remove his eyes immediately. Instead, they flew to California and picked up medicine from me, and I put him on a regimen of very high THC and CBD cannabis oil. And he is now cancer free. He has both his eyes, and he has his whole life in front of him. And so I do it for people like Waldo. I do it for people who still need this medicine. I know they can heal from it. And I want other people to be in this industry. I don't want to hold anyone back, because we all need each other. We're all spokes on a wheel making the wheel turn. Without us, without all of us together, we're not going anywhere. So that's what keeps me going. And for me, I've always felt very strongly about the medical side of it, because I find it fascinating how I've watched people heal over the years. I remember I had a patient when I first opened. She came in a wheelchair. Her name's Randy. Randy had breast cancer, stage 4 breast cancer. They had given her 6 weeks to live, and she was just looking for a way to be more comfortable. She started using cannabis, and all of a sudden her tumor started shrinking. And today Randy is cancer-free, and she runs marathons all over the country. And she's the strongest woman I know. She's 70 years old. We thought we were going to lose her 20 years ago. And just knowing that because I opened that store, Randy had access to a safe place that had clean medicine, that's why I do this.
Thank you so, so much for sharing that. I really, really just appreciate your time for coming on and for sharing with us the story and your motivations and also the passion. I mean, we really hear from people all over the industry that it really comes down to that passion and helping people. And yeah, I think that's, I'm just sitting here. Really, really thank you so much for taking the time.
Point out that we shouldn't ever forget that there are people serving jail and, or in prison, I should say, for this plant. Some people are serving life in prison all over the world for this plant, and we need to fight for them because their voices are not heard. They should not be in a box away from their family because they touched a plant. And so that's something that's very important to me. Check out Can Do Clemency and Mission Green, the Weldon Project. Those are two great organizations that are fighting for prisoners and getting them released from prison with clemency or a pardon. So don't forget those people, and I'm sure there's a lot of them in Europe.
Oh, absolutely. This is one thing that we still have to see a big push and a big fight for over in Europe is, yeah, the real expungement. Because one thing that we've seen in the U.S. and with states and how it goes is a lot of the time there's a big lobby, there's a big group and a focus as well on the expungement of the criminal records. But this is something that we really haven't seen much of in Europe yet, and I think we're going to have a big push of it in the coming years. I just wanted to take the time again and say thank you. And I know you have a super busy schedule, so we also don't want to take up your time. But for the people who have listened in and who've joined us in the audience, give them a quick shout out where they can find you, where they can get in touch with you, where they can learn more about what you do.
I have a website, which is drdina420.com. You can find me there. You can email me through the website, or you can send me a DM on Instagram or Twitter. I tend to check Instagram more often. My Instagram is drdina420 as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Sorry.
Liam, I want to know what you're smoking on today.
I was here about to try and tell you as well. It's funny that we say it. It's we've actually in Spain, we've got some hold of some what our guy is calling humble genetics. So all I can say is it's definitely got more of that American taste to it. But I just, yeah, again, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on today and for taking the time. And I'd also love to kind of open it up and let some other guys ask questions, because I know we got Paul in here and Jared, and I just mentioned humble, and these dudes are also absolute legends. And again, Dr. Dina, thank you so much for everything you're doing in the space and the community. I'm absolutely blessed and humbled to have you on today.
Sure, happy to take questions.
Thanks a million, Dr. Dina. I really appreciate it. I know you're super busy, but it's really important to hear your perspective. And I can't wait to hopefully work together and push that narrative in the UK so we can move things forward and help everybody out there. They're struggling. So I'm excited. Thanks again today.
Thank you, Corey.
I want to jump in and say, hi, Dr. Dina. I've heard you speak in other rooms. I totally honor you. And you and I are basically motivated by the same thing. And so I just really love to see you do what you're doing.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate you. Keep fighting the good fight.
Just reflect that back to you to come up and visit us at Ebb and Flow Farm. You can check out the farm I work at. It's called ebbandflowfarm.com. And that all the words are spelled out. But I also wanted to just comment on what Dr. Dina was saying about, you know, remembering the people that are doing life for cannabis or doing time for cannabis. I've had many friends that have done time for cannabis, and I've narrowly escaped doing time a number of times myself. But I wanted to let Liam know that I was one of the founding members of Green Prisoners Release in Amsterdam, which transmogrified into the Cannabis College, which is still going today. It's yes, one of sir. My great life achievements. I actually wrote the manifesto for the Cannabis College, entitled "The Fundamental Challenge of Our Time," and I think I'm the only person in the world that I'm aware of who's ever had a photograph taken with a cop lighting my joint. But Jared's back, so I wanted to just yield the floor to him. And also, I'm curious about Anna, if Anna's going to jump in.
Oh my God, I can jump in. I can try again, absolutely. So I am basically chronic fatigue syndrome patient who use the benefits from cannabis to manage the symptoms I have, like pain, sleeping issues, and nausea, and all the imbalance in my body. And I'm extremely passionate about breaking free from self-imposed and cultural stigmas. And with that, I am now launching this week and next week Access, that is a bilingual digital village for us wandering beings to access ourselves through artistic expression and cannabis advocacy. And if you got any tips or any good words and wishes for that one, I would appreciate it a lot, because it feels like important work, and I want my values to go out to the people who need them.
Thank you for sharing, Anna. It is pretty amazing when you find the one plant that helps you the most, and helps so many different symptoms of chronic fatigue. So keep trying different strains, because you never know. One might be the special one that just unlocks the key or the lock to your endocannabinoid system and makes you all better.
Anna, I have a suggestion for you. I have a recipe online called leche verde, green milk in Spanish. And it's the whole plant blended in spring water, the roots, the seeds, the buds, the pollen, and you strain that and drink it. And I would be real surprised if your chronic fatigue could stand up to leche verde. I've had wonderful feedback from people who say that it feels like their blood is being oxygenated. And
Paul, do you juice the leaves at all?
No, I don't juice them. I blend them in spring water, because the juice is too strong for me. I can't drink it. But the leaves and the flowers, when added to, like, I use about a cup of seeds, a cup of green material, whatever I can get, either the leaves or the buds, and try to get some male pollen flowers in there, and just about a half a cup of roots that I make a tea with, and then I use that tea in the about a quart of water to blend all the rest of the ingredients, the whole plant in a single drink, blended and strained. And you can sweeten it with agave nectar, and a little bit of cinnamon is nice for flavoring. But I served it at the Cannabis College in Amsterdam in 1997 and 98, and people just had tremendous stories to tell after they drank it. For myself, I went from needing 9 hours of sleep every night minimum to doing better on 5. It was very pronounced. So, Anna, I hope that helps you. And you can find the link to Leche Verde in my bio. Again, it's not a hot link. But anybody who sends me an email, I will send you a trove of hot links to my work. And you're certainly welcome to use anything in there to help anybody that you can think of. So that's Paul, and I am done speaking for now. Thank you.
Hey, Paul, thank you so much for sharing that. You are an absolute OG and a true legend. Thank you so much for blessing us with your presence and for sharing that. For the people listening in, maybe who are just like tweaked on that in a little interest and were like, ooh, I got to get on there. What's your email? Shout it out for them so they can hit you up.
projectpeace@yahoo.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Paul. Really, really appreciate you sharing that.
Thank you, Liam.
Thank you so much, Paul. That was an interesting one. I'm going to see if I find some cannabis roots here in Norway. The hunt will be good. I'm done speaking. Thank you.
We have a tool, you know, another resource that she can send people, or she can come experience herself, or have a group of doctors or a group of whoever come out here. We have, you know, a big space. We have, you know, we can have hundreds of people come and stay, spend the night. And it's really beautiful. We're right on the ocean. There's a beach. There's a 9-hole golf course around the airport.
Party at Jared's house.
Of healing.
Let's go. Let's go.
We're all coming to your house, Jared.
If, you can hear the birds. If you can get here.
If you can get here. If you can get here, you definitely are invited. It's a trip to get, you know, from the 101. I'm straight in from Garberville, about 45 minutes on the ocean. It's the most beautiful. We have 400 people that live in our whole town. It's a really magical little spot, and we just cater to people coming in from out of town to come and experience healing and wellness, and you can come and fish and hike and bike. We have the most beautiful 26 miles of shoreline hikes in the world, the Lost Coast Trail, and that's really what, you know, we're trying to get people out to come experience nature while they experience the cannabinoids and the terpenes and learning all about, you know, just getting their self healthy in a good, happy, spiritual environment. So I just wanted to offer that to anybody.
Thank you, Joe. That sounds amazing. We need retreats like this all around the world.
Absolutely. Teach them to grow their own.
I started a bed and breakfast in France. And one night when my business partner was sleeping, I went onto our website and I added hemp-friendly clothing optional. And we tripled our bookings.
Okay, that's a strategy.
Well, I'm going to keep it to the medicine. Yeah, it's definitely a strategy.
Nudity is medicine.
But if everybody's so uncomfortable, they can't calm down and relax, then they're not actually going to heal. That's what we got to get the right crowd on the right weekend and maybe.
Well, I specialize in that class.
Hey, we're about to spark up another joint here. Thank you so much again for David, Corey, especially Dr. Dina for coming on and making time for us tonight and having us with here, and for Paul and Jared for coming in and sharing. Really, really appreciate everybody's presence and the wisdom and the knowledge that was shared. Thank you again, everybody.
Liam, you're awesome.
Thanks Liam, for
remembering. You're awesome, Corey. All of you guys, y'all are so awesome. I appreciate y'all doing this and recording it and putting it out on Spotify so it can really get out to the crowd and really have an impact. Thank you, Dr. Dina. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Dr. Dina, let's hear it one more time from you as well. I know you're busy. I know you probably got a lot of shit to do now as well, but we're sparking one up right now and smoking it for you. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence here on episode 11 of The Cannabis Maker.
Liam, thank you so much for having me. This has been a wonderful experience with you and David and Corey, and we've got Paul and Jared here and Mark. I am actually in the process of heating up my Puffco Peak to have a dab with you all of some Dr. Green Thumb Wonder Brett OG, the Oz OG, and I'm going to be enjoying that. So dabs up, everybody.
Hash rosin dabs up here in Canada.
I wanted to thank Liam for reminding me to roll another joint.
Hey, there you go. You know what joint a day keeps a doctor away, but we keep it more like 10, and we bring in Dr. Dina for this one. Thank you so much for hitting your puff code there with us as well, Dr. Dina. One question I gotta ask before we finish it. This is really like a burning, itching one. If you gotta put like a favorite strain for a Monday, a Friday, and a Sunday, what would those strains be, Dr. Dina?
G girl all day, every day, 24/7. But I do enjoy some good terps. I like the Peach Oz, which is really hard to find, but it's delightful.
How do I get my honorary doctorate from Snoop Dogg?
Hey, it's for the shizzle only. They call me Dizzle.
That's awesome. All right, well, good.
It's a Dr. Dina world out there now, for sure. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Dina. It has been an incredible episode 11 of The Cannabis Maker. It's been insane. We've had wisdom and knowledge bombs and everything dropped, and so many tips for people to look out for in the industry, and had everybody bless us with our presence. It's been amazing. Thank you so much, everybody. And we'll catch you again soon for another episode of The Cannabis Maker podcast. Take care.
This episode was brought to you by Nordic Herbzone, Norway's first cannabis and hemp brand. Makers of the finest organic hemp papers. Get your sample pack today and taste the terps.
The Cannabis Maker podcast is hosted by Nordic Herbzone, Ecan, and Resonate Cannabis, Inc.